Welcome to the Center in the City podcast. I'm your host, Wade Brill, and during this series, I'll be interviewing various thought leaders, wellness experts, and humans on how they practice sustainable self-care and mindfulness. We'll get real and raw, talk about the light and the shadow side of self-care and mindfulness, and how we can actually stay centered amid the chaos and the hustle and bustle of our modern day world. So settle in and get centered. This podcast episode is brought to you by Centered in the City, a virtual on-demand self-care and mindfulness platform with different meditations, journaling prompts, nourishing recipes, and Pilates flows, all designed to support you feeling calm, focused, and energized as you live your life in this modern day world. For more information, head on over to centeredinthecity.com. and claim your 7-day free trial. Welcome back to the Centered in the City podcast. Today's solo episode, we'll be exploring some themes that have been showing up in my coaching sessions recently around managing overwhelm, not just overwhelm with life, but specifically our to-do list or just getting started, as well as how we can focus our attention to help us settle the overwhelm, so how they kind of go hand in hand. So whether you are listening to me while you take a walk, while you're preparing dinner, or just working and hanging out, I welcome you to settle in and let's get centered. A lot of people feel stressed and overwhelmed. It's extremely common. Researching for this podcast episode, I got to see some updated data from the American Psychology Association. The data suggests that long-term stress sustained since COVID-19 has had a significant impact on people's well-being. And part of the evidence for this is that chronic illness has increased, especially between people ages 35 and 44. Chronic illness increased 48% reported from 2019 to 58% in 2023. And the same age bracket are experiencing high increases of mental health diagnoses, which transitioned from 31% in 2019 to 45% in 2023. People ages 18 to 34 are reporting their highest level of mental health rates at 50% in 2023. What this research is demonstrating is that it's not just from acute stressors, it's because there has been consistent chronic stress for so many years. And this chronic stress is creating a lot of inflammation in the body, and inflammation, which is one of the root causes of many diseases that our bodies can get, from experiencing digestive issues to heart disease to weight gain to stroke. When our body is experiencing inflammation, our immune system gets attacked because it consistently thinks that we are under threat. So we can't necessarily change the stress and overwhelm that is happening at a global level, and systematic changes take time. We as individuals have the personal responsibility to then change our relationship to stress, to figure out how do we get to proactively manage stress to the best of our ability. Knowing that some stress is really good, it's good to have some fire under our buns to keep going or meeting deadlines or to get things done or to grow or to push ourselves outside of our comfort zones. But when we're under consistent threat, it puts our system into fight, flight, or freeze. And we aren't really helpful as humans when we are constantly in that state of reactivity, of shutdown, of freeze. So when we examine our stress, I think it'd be really helpful to think about how are we internally relating to stress, and what are we doing externally to relate to stress? Internal stress would be our self-talk. How are we talking to ourselves? Are we lifting ourselves up? Are we letting the negative, judgy voices in our mind win? How are we feeding ourselves? Are we feeding our internal bodies with foods that are nourishing and hydrating and actually healing and helpful for our cells and our body and our brains? Are we sleeping enough? What is our optimal sleep cycles like? I think for an average, we can say, you know, science has shown 7 to 8 hours minimum, but for your body, what bracket of sleep do you thrive in? Like personally, I know I need bare minimum 8 hours, maybe even closer to 9 hours to feel fully restored. Movement, are we moving our bodies and sweating and allowing adrenal glands to rebalance and finding some more homeostasis within our bodies? And externally, how are we managing our stress? You know, thinking about the environment that we live in. Do we live in an environment that feels conducive from design to aesthetic to people that are in our space that we spend time with to how we even spend our time? So we can look at all of these factors internally and externally. However, one of the things that I see over and over again with my clients is this consistent feeling and pressure to be productive. And we talked about this a little bit last week on the podcast around what is enough and starting to understand our relationship to enoughness, because we are so conditioned to not feel enough or that we're not doing enough. So I really welcome you to check out that episode if you haven't yet already. But we live in a world that is really loud, where we have constant pings and dings from our emails to our phones to all of the apps to Slack or Teams, our text messages, our Instagram inboxes, our WhatsApp messages, right? There's so many different portals of communication that we get infiltrated from. Not to mention that even when we are in an app, let's say like Netflix, we then get bombarded with other shows to watch or other advertisements, and we're just constantly getting fed data and media and information. Because our attention is getting caught up and swirled by so many things, it's so hard to have self-control to minimize all of those distractions and really focus our attention. Focus our attention at least long enough to feel like we can get something done. When we get something done, when we have that focus to work on that task and we can cross it off our list, right? There's that sense of confidence and proudness and feeling of like, yeah, I was productive, and that boosts self-esteem, and we want to then keep going, keep working, keep moving forward. So today I'm not talking about how can we be more productive and try another productivity hack and get, you know, trapped into that conversation. I really more so want to explore how we can grab hold of our attention. Because when we can grab hold of our attention, we then feel more in control of our life, of our time, of our body, where we're putting our focus. And that feels really empowering. We don't feel like we are at the effect of life, the victim cycle that can easily happen. Instead, we are like, okay, I'm owning this shit. I've got this. Let me decide where I want to put my time and attention. In a coaching session the other day, I was working with my client who's a mother, and she was feeling just really overwhelmed by the list of things to do, work, being a mom, you know, all the different hats that she's wearing. And yet, even though she had the list of things to focus on, it was really challenging for her to just sit down and do them, because the mind and attention wanted to go towards things that have more of an immediate reward, taking a nap or looking at social media. And so her list never got really accomplished because her attention was always getting pulled and time spent on other things, things that weren't really in alignment with her values. Yet it was really hard, right? We are surrounded by our phones and by our computers and by these things that are super shiny and addictive. And so it makes complete sense that we have these like drugs in front of us all the time. And it takes a lot of energy and focus to resist taking the drugs and getting that hit of dopamine. And we discussed there's then this belief that, you know, she can multitask, that she could be listening to a Zoom work event while also scrolling on Instagram or doing some online shopping, and felt she was paying attention enough. And what we slowed down to recognize is she's feeding the cycle of overwhelm. She's adding more stimuli to her plate that creates not only an unhelpful atmosphere inside of the brain, where, you know, some research is showing that multitasking with our media creates less gray matter, so less neural activity inside of the brain. If she's constantly kind of feeding that loop and that programming, she's not multitasking, right? Multitasking is a myth, and she's not really absorbing work, and she's not really focused on her apps of whatever she's looking at. And this is just one example. I mean, you, as you're listening, I'm sure can think of how many times have you took out your phone to scroll social media while you're also streaming a show, while you're also trying to have a conversation with a family member or be present with your kid. I caught myself doing it last night. I was lying in bed watching a Will and Grace episode, and I started to scroll Instagram, and I was like, why am I doing this right now? I'm not focusing on either one. What is the point? And so I paused and I put my phone away, and I actually then watched the show. When we think about work situations where we are in a meeting and we're also on Slack, or we're in Teams, or we're sending emails, whatever it might be, we think we're multitasking and able to be present, but actually research shows that we're not really doing a service for ourselves or for anybody else, not to mention the constant distractions that are coming inward. So when we get pinged and dinged, or when we get taken out of writing that email or working on those slides or trying to do our more focused, deeper work, when we get pulled out, our attention gets grabbed. And so this combination of things happening internally, designed by our own urges and actions, and as well as this external world of noise and attention economy, it creates a lot of overload and overwhelm on our systems, on our body, on our psyche. It's actually a process called attention residue. And what this means, it's a psychological term that highlights we can't really switch our focus or our attention when our mind is still thinking about that other task we were just doing. So it takes a little bit of time for our mind to catch up with where our body is, to be able to be focused with what we are transitioning into in this very moment. I think this is why transition moments, you know, when people commuted from the office back to home, there was some space to actually fully transition, to leave work behind and to feel like, okay, now I can be here in my body as I'm moving on the train back to my house. So our mind needs support. It needs training. It is like this wild horse or loud monkey that we can think about that is causing so much havoc that we need some training. We need some mindfulness training to focus our attention. And of course, some mind wandering is really helpful. It's helpful for creativity. It's helpful for our mind to be bored. We need that kind of spaciousness. However, we're not allowing ourselves to have that kind of spaciousness because we're so sucked in to the pings and dings of the world. And it creates the cycle that we're always on, our body's always activated, and we just keep staying in it. So how do we counteract this overwhelm, and how do we train our mind to be more present and focused? I have a few ideas, and I'm going to share them with you now. And I also welcome you to share your ideas. I welcome you to listen to what works for you. This is just a bunch of offerings of what's worked for me, what's worked for clients. The first practice I want to offer is probably an obvious one if you know me and you know my work, but let's strengthen those mindfulness muscles. When we strengthen our ability to be in the present moment with a lot of curiosity and kindness, we are able to witness our internal and external experience with a little more clarity. We're able to see our actions, our behaviors, our thoughts, our emotions. And when we gather that kind of information, when we're not in it, but when we can gather it and kind of see it from a bird's eye perspective, it gives us insight to then start to choose more effectively and think about how we want to integrate those insights into our life. So I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of mindfulness 101 and all of the different ways we get to train our attention, but from a high level perspective, we can really think about training our attention in simple ways, even for 3 minutes a day, right? Can we throughout the day, even for just 1 minute, bring our attention to the present moment? So can we constantly have these little mindful check-ins with ourselves? It can be as simple as rubbing our fingers together to feel the sensation of being present in our bodies. Can be bringing our attention to our feet and noticing our toes inside of our socks or our shoes. Does it feel hot, cold? We can connect to our breath, finding that anchor of breath, taking even just 3 conscious breaths every hour. It could be training our attention to listen to sound, to just take a moment to pause in between meetings for 30 seconds and just notice sounds in our physical space. So when we're practicing this type of anchoring into our body, into breath, into sounds, maybe even looking at color and getting curious at what's outside of our window or staring at a plant, we're training our attention to be focused. We're zooming in to something. And that is so hard and so challenging in a world where we are spread so thin. But when we can practice this focused attention muscle, we are then able to have control when our mind starts to wander and maybe wander into places that start to feel too overwhelming, or wander into unhelpful thoughts or rumination or spirals, and it distracts us from our sense of self or what we're trying to focus on or achieve, or even just wandering to all of the pings and dings that try to grab hold of our attention. The second practice is really helpful for when we are feeling those moments of overwhelm, kind of in a free state, and we just don't know where to go within our to-do list, and we know we want to start to make some movement, but there's kind of avoidance brewing, but we want to get into our list, or we really, you know, want to feel good about ourselves and want to follow through with our value of achievement or our value of resiliency or our value of grit or our value of passion, whatever it might be. We want to tackle that to-do list, but we get stuck, we get frozen. So first thing I welcome you to do is to set a timer for 10, 15 minutes. When you set a timer for 10, 15 minutes, you say to yourself, I'm just going to do this task for 10, 15 minutes. And then once you get into that task, you start to realize, oh, this is not so bad. My mind was making this into a mountain. This is not so challenging. Or, wow, I'm getting some inspiration here. This is fun. Or this feels really good. Like, we start to recognize we don't have to be scared or shut down by the overwhelm. It starts to feel approachable. And once your alarm goes off, you can decide to pause. Or you can say, no, I'm in it. I'm going to keep going and keep going. But setting that timer can really help hold your attention into a container versus just saying, okay, I have this afternoon or I have these 3 hours to get all of these things done. A third practice is setting a boundary. Like, we need boundaries with technology the same way that you might give boundaries of technology to your kids. So maybe even making a conscious rule and saying, I'm not going to be on two devices at the same time. I'm not going to be on my laptop while I'm watching a show. I'm not going to be scrolling Instagram while I'm watching Netflix. To say, I'm going to just focus on one piece of technology at a time. And when you notice that two come into the picture, just say two is too many and bring your attention back to just one. Kind of notice that pull and see if you can just simplify your focus. So even though we're still focusing on tech, can it be really targeted? Can you keep your attention just on one thing? A fourth practice in reducing the overwhelm, cultivating more focus, is can you think about environments where it feels more nurturing or connecting, not as stimulating, to be with people? So for instance, I know somebody who just flat out said, hey, I'm not able to join your community, and this is referring to a community of meditation teachers, because Zoom just doesn't work for me. So I have to limit as many Zoom connections as I can. And he kind of knew what supported his system. Obviously, if you're working remote and Zoom, Google Hangout, whatever it might be, is your form of constant connection, there's something there that, you know, a system that we kind of have to work with. But can you keep your video off, or can you say for certain meetings or a percentage of meetings for the day, I'm going to call in versus take a video call, and kind of switch that sort of stimuli? Or if you're meeting up with friends, can you find environments that feel nourishing to you? Maybe meeting up with a friend at a bar felt really good in your early 20s or used to feel good last year, but that's actually not the space that you want to find connection. Maybe it's going on a walk in the park. Maybe it's meeting with them at somebody's house. Maybe it's making dinner together. Again, whatever it might be, just thinking about that kind of space that allows you to focus on connection and not be distracted or overstimulated by the environment. A few more ideas. One of the ways that overwhelm can also happen and end up on our to-do list is just making a lot of plans. And plans are beautiful and great, and especially if they're things that you want to do and that bring you joy. Yes. And just check in to make sure that there are actually things that give you life and support you, not things that you feel like you have to or obligated. And working with those, challenging your beliefs around why you have to attend something or should attend something, could really help lighten the load and take some of this stress off of you and create a little bit more space, not only in your tangible schedule, but in your energy, and even just in your mental and emotional capacity. The sixth practice to offer is one that might sound really simple, but it might be really hard for a lot of people. I know it can be really hard for me as somebody who's very independent and stubborn, but asking for help can help reduce a lot of overwhelm. Whether that's hiring an assistant or hiring somebody else in your business or telling your manager that you need additional support for a project. Maybe you're a parent who feels like they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting of the household or with the kids and the emotional or mental or physical labor, and you need some help from them, right? And how can you ask for some help? And if they're tapped out, how can you both work together to find some extra support from a neighbor, a friend in your community, or hiring help? The seventh idea around reducing our load is minimizing the news. And this is really hard to do these days when we want to stay politically present to what's happening, when we want to stay engaged and we need to at a certain point. You've heard it before, I'm going to say it again, limiting our news, because we can so easily get sucked into the cycle, and that creates so much stress when we're constantly tapped in and seeing images of war and destruction, and also constantly seeing real-time images of things happening all outside of our bubbles. And it's important to stay connected to hear what's happening outside of our bubbles. But when we're hearing it and feeling it at the fast pace that we are on social media or with news notifications, it becomes very overstimulating for our minds, bodies, nervous systems, and it can shut us down and create more of this overwhelm and toll on our ability to stay present and connected to one another. So part of this practice is, can you even train your mind to only engage with news at certain times of the day or in certain formats? Maybe you don't follow a bunch of news resources. Maybe you decide that you're just going to read the New York Times in the morning or the skim in your inbox and that's it. But be really clear about how you engage with it and how you create some focus around it. Last but not least, I'm going to talk about food and nourishment because it is so essential for how we function as humans. When I'm heading into periods of stress or when I'm feeling chronic stress, I notice my body craves certain things. And science has proven that, you know, stress activates those parts of us that want the carby, salty, fatty things that feel comforting and satiating. And that's okay. We don't want to shame that, make that wrong. However, we also want to make sure that we're getting a lot of nutrients in our bodies to deal with the inflammation that our body is feeling. So we're not eating as much processed food or packaged food or salty food or super fatty food that is creating more of the inflammation in our bodies. So can we think about more vegetables, more simple proteins, eating legumes, having soups, keeping things really simple for our system to digest so that we're not creating more stress on our digestive system. I'm going to link some of my favorite recipes below in the show notes that I have on Centered in the City that are anti-inflammatory. And these meals are not fancy. It's about keeping it simple and clean and really healthy and nourishing for our systems to bring our focus and attention back to actually what feels good, what feels nourishing. One more, because even though I talked about this slightly before, I just want to highlight it, that taking care of our sleep is so essential. It is really this foundational place that we can take for granted, especially for somebody that sleeps decently well. But when our sleep is off or we aren't getting our optimal amount of sleep, our literal capacity to hold the day, to hold the pings and dings that we experience is so much more narrow. So sleep is so foundational. And so exploring your sleep hygiene, what can you tighten up in your sleep rituals to support you having deeper, more restful, and restorative sleep? And if you are somebody who needs to take a nap throughout the day, listen to your body. If you need to sleep and allow the body to restore, that is your human right. I shared this on my Instagram stories the other day, but if you haven't already heard Trisha Hersey on any podcasts, she's great, or read her book, Rest is Resistance, Free Yourself from Grind Culture and Reclaim Your Life, I highly recommend checking both of those resources out as a way to understand and untangle ourselves from the feeling of always needing to be on and this pressure to do, do, do. And sleep is such an important time where our brain literally cleans itself. And when it cleans itself, it helps scrape off all of the excess plaque and gunk that can get, you know, congested up there. And it then allows us to actually have more capacity to fire those neurons and show up feeling a little bit more sharp and present. So just letting all of those insights and practices and awarenesses just land. And my hope is that they don't feel overwhelming, but that they feel inspiring of various possibilities to explore of how you can practice being with this overwhelm in a more supportive way where we can start to train our focus in this loud, attention-sucking, economy we live in, and support ourselves staying connected to our center, coming back again and again and again. I welcome you to think about what's one practice that you listened to today that you're like, oh, huh, I've wanted to try that but haven't, or, oh, that's interesting and new. I'm curiosity about that. Or maybe a different idea came up for you as you were listening, or you've heard of a different practice and you've always been wanting to try it. May this be your sign and signal and inspiration to really make it a priority. Let me know what comes up for you or what you're excited to practice by sharing a message with me on Instagram at onewade, or you can send me a note in the contact form in the show notes. Thank you for being here and allowing me to be entering your earbuds, your heart, your mind, for sharing your attention with me. And my hope is that this episode felt really nourishing and insightful. And may you know you're not alone. And if the overwhelm ever, ever feels too much, please seek help and support. You are not alone. Until next time, stay centered.